I'll tell you one thing. This team is really special, and you ain't coming to my house playing that water bottle flip game. I don't care who you are, king, or what you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. We're going to fight. Nobody out there going to punk us.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_B-Ball. We're here to talk about all 9 games from Monday. We're going to preview the 3 games for Tuesday. So
let's get to it.
Of course, this podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we have a podcast for all NBA teams and all NFL teams, along with Locked On Fantasy Football, Locked On NFL, and a Locked On NFL Draft Show as well. So if you want to hear about your favorite team, we've just got new hosts for Locked On Bulls, which have been on a bit of a hiatus since Sean Hyken has moved out of Chicago back to Portland. Got new hosts for Locked On Bulls and a new host for Locked On Warriors as well. So those shows have been a little bit quiet lately, but the new hosts are on board. So those shows will be going up again. If you are a Bulls fan, my commiserations, or if you are a Warriors fan, pretty good time for you. You can go check out those individual podcasts. As I said, we're going to talk about all of the action from Monday's games. We're going to preview the 3 games on Tuesday. So what better way to start things off by starting with the monstrous line of the night? And it goes to my boy, Robert Covington of the Philadelphia 76ers. He was enormous for the Sixers. 31 points for Bob Cove, 5 triples, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and his efficiency was through the roof once again. 9 of 12 from the field and a perfect 8 of 8 from the line. Amazingly, Bob Cove is the 14th ranked player this season. We looked at what he did last year, especially the second half, and went, yeah, well, it might be hard for him to put up similar numbers this season. I was definitely someone who thought he was a really good value pick. I didn't think he was going to be this good, because people were really concerned, oh man, Embiid, Šarić is going to take his minutes, Simmons, they're all going to take his usage. And my pushback was, his game doesn't require usage in order to put up big fantasy numbers. And last year, he was a below average usage player anyway at 19%. This year, he is down to 18.7%. So it's not a significant drop, but he's doing it because now he is getting better looks. He was at 39.8% from the field last year, 49.7% this year, so a 10% increase. That'll probably regress. His threes have gone from 33% to 50%. His true shooting has gone from 53% to 68%. Yeah, just a remarkable increase in efficiency while keeping the steal numbers and the block numbers relatively similar. Last year, he was at 1.9 steals and 1 block. This year, he's at 1.6 and 0.8. He's still getting his 6 rebounds per game. And in fact, he's over 7 in the last 4 games. He's hitting a ridiculous 3.7 triples per game. He has been one of the best value picks in the middle of the draft. Again, he was sliding down to 70 or 80 in many drafts because people were really concerned about Simmons and Embiid and Fultz in coming in, and he was going to lose minutes. I was a little bit concerned. I was never concerned that he was going to lose minutes or that he was going to lose his starting job or anything along those lines, but he has exceeded any sort of expectations that I could have had for him. He is going to get a significant payday. He is a player that maybe he challenges for all-star berth in the Eastern Conference. I believe he should have been an all-defensive player last season. He is really putting up some significant numbers, and he is, you talk about the process and tanking for draft picks. This is the process. Bob Cove is the process. He is a guy. They just took flyers on guys. Let's see what happens. We're not concentrating on short-term wins. We want to see what we can develop. Yeah, there were the times where we had to deal with Jakar Sampson and Tony Roten, but for all those players, we unearthed TJ McConnell. We got Bob Cove into a rotation and playing minutes, and he has developed into a really above-average quality NBA starter and a quality fantasy player. So Bob Cove is your monstrous line of the night. Currently a top 15 guy. Won't stick, but a top 50 finish. Absolutely a massive chance for Bob Cove to remain as a top 50 player for this season. The waiver wire line of the night, I think this bloke's got it a couple of times already this season, and that is Marco Bellinelli of the Atlanta Hawks. 14 points for Bally, but his value came from the fact that he hit 4 triples. He had 3 boards, but the 3 assists and 4 steals along with 50% shooting was really a tremendous performance from Bellinelli. He is the 93rd ranked player for the season, and most of that's because he's hitting 2.5 threes per game and getting 1.3 steals. And in fact, over his last 3 games, he's hit 9 triples, which is obviously a lot of value. He's at 46% from 3 on the season. He's always been a good three-point shooter. I imagine that is going to come back down, that 46% that he's currently shooting. But for now, he does have some waiver wire value. Now, he's doing this. He's got this top 100 rank in under 30 minutes per game. In fact, it's only 26 minutes per game. So you would have to imagine that when Ersan Ilyasova returns, Mike Muscala, DeAndre Bembry, when all these guys come back, that he's going to lose maybe a couple of minutes and maybe a couple of shots, and the efficiency will drop. So that will make him not a really highly valuable guy. But if you're looking for threes, if you're looking for some decent efficiency, maybe a guy that gets some steals, Bellinelli is a guy that can absolutely have value on those streaming type days. He's got that 26 to 27 minute role sort of locked in. He's scoring, he's hitting threes, he's doing it efficiently, and they're all things that can be really valuable. So not a guy that you're running out to go and grab or must own or anything along those lines, but a player that's providing the sort of value, the exact sort of value that you want from that guy. I want reliable threes that gives me steals and do it efficiently. Well, Bellinelli is doing that for you this year. Even though he's listed as a probable with an Achilles pretty much every game, he is getting out there, he's putting up the numbers, and he's looking pretty good. We've still got a few more awards to get to, and then we're going to break down all the nine of those games in a little bit more detail. Let's talk Young Gun of the Night, and it goes to the Utah Jazz's Donovan Mitchell. I was just going to call him Don Mitchell, but I thought I'd better give him the full name there. Donovan Mitchell, 24 points in his starting role, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. 3 triples and 1 block, 10 of 19 from the field, and that's a massive bonus for Mitchell. If he can hit his shots, that's huge for his value, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. I've got a couple of things to say about Don Mitchell here. If you recall back, and many of you don't listen to this podcast once the regular season is over, you drop off when the playoffs come and all the off-season stuff, but those of you who were listening at that time, you would have heard me talk about Donovan Mitchell a lot, saying players who have really high steal rates in college, they, not invariably, but a lot of the time, they translate into really good NBA players. And that's why I was super high on Mitchell as a draft prospect and also as a fantasy asset. The field goal percentage was always going to be a concern, as it is for many rookie guards, and he was not a high field goal percentage guy at Louisville. But that steal rate enables these guys to stay on the court. He's really aggressive with what he does. He's already taken that starting job. He is not losing that starting job at all this season. I don't think that's going to happen. He's going to be a 30-plus minute per night guy for the rest of the year. Now, the question is whether he remains as the shooting guard, or does he take that starting job off Ricky Rubio as the point guard, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But for now, Mitchell's a guy that you have to own. But in saying that, he is the 103rd ranked player for the season because he's shooting 38% from the field. He's shooting 31% from three, and his true shooting's 48%. And that's coming after he was at over 50% in this game. So it shows how poor things were. But his last four games, 18 points, 2 triples, 3 boards, 2 steals, half a block, and still with a true shooting of just 46% in that time. So his numbers, he really does have top 40 upside. That's if he can get to like 45% from the field. That's probably a massive, massive ask. And if he cracks 40%, you should be happy. Now, in some cases, people will be like, I don't want to add him because he's going to hurt my field goal percentage. I would add him. I wouldn't care what my field goal percentage is. I would add him. To me, punting field goal percentage is almost a must in most cases. Anyway, I would add him because from where he is at the moment, where he's at shooting 38% from the season, I expect a 1 to 2 to maybe 3 or 4% increase as the season goes on. I think he can get to 40. I think he can maybe get to 42%. But these other stats, the steals, the points, the threes, he's getting some decent blocks as a shooting guard. I think you hold him. And look, if you have to take a loss for a week or two in the field goal percentage category, that's fine. I wouldn't bother about it. Now, when I look at trades, I do have factor a lot into team build. So I was having a discussion today in a league about, it's a double-double league and I'm punting free throws and I'm going real hard after the big man categories. And I've got a ton of centers. I've got Boogie Cousins. I've got Nikola Jokic. I've got Clint Capella. I've got, who else have I got? DeAndre Jordan. I've got The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman. There's a 12-team league with 14-man rosters. So I've got all those centers and someone goes, oh, can I have a center off you? And I went, yeah, okay, well, what are you going to offer? And he goes, I'll give you Oladipo for Capella. And on the surface, you'd probably take Oladipo. But for what I want in that situation, no, Capella really works well for me. He's like a top 20 player in my sort of a build there. And he works fantastically for a team where I'm punting points and I'm building up the double-double category. I'm building up the blocks. My field goal percentage is massive and I'm sitting pretty well in that league. I think I'm third at the moment. When I'm looking at free agents, aren't really adding free agents based entirely off my build. I'll just grab a guy. I'll grab a Don Mitchell, even though he's not necessarily going to fit what I do. I look at that more in trades. In free agents, yeah, if I'm looking to stream a guy in, I'll look at my specific categories. But if there's a hot guy who's really pushing forward like Mitchell, I just grab him and we'll just go from there. Maybe it turns into a trade. Maybe he works out for you. Maybe these other categories come around, but I just grab that guy and deal with the consequences. And if he comes in and reduces my field goal percentage, which would be pretty tough considering I've got Capella, Jokic, and DeAndre Jordan and Deadman on my team, it'd be pretty tough for him to reduce that field goal percentage. But if he did, and this is a team I've got Marcus Smart on, because I know that I'm not worried about Marcus Smart's field goal percentage with those guys. But yeah, adding Mitchell, I'll just deal with it. And if I have to take a loss while things get figured out, that's fine. But I would add the guy and then work it out later. But in a trade, I'm more likely to consider. I wouldn't be like, well, Oladipo's clearly the better player, so I take him in exchange for Capella. Maybe he's not clearly the better player, but you know what my thought process is going there. But I wouldn't take it in that sort of a situation. Free agents, completely different story when I'm looking at building teams. I went a little bit off the track then when talking, but hopefully that was some useful information for you. Let's look at the dart of the night, and it is Don Mitchell's teammate, and that's the ravishing one. Ravishing Rick Rubio is your dud of the night. 3 points for Rick, 0 rebounds, 2 assists and 0 steals, 1 of 7 from the field and 1 of 1 from the line. Rubio has been really disappointing lately, but everyone's, oh man, he's killing me. He's the 45th ranked player this season. So he hasn't been horrible. He's averaging 13.6 points and 4 boards, 5.6 assists and 1.9 steals. Now, the reason that people are disappointed is that the 5.6 assists are below the 8 assists that they were hoping he was going to get. The 37% from the field, they're well aware of that. You know that that's going to be a problem. It's more the fact that he's scoring and he's not getting assists. And then we move to what's happened over the last week, where he's barely inside the top 150 and he's playing just 27 minutes a night. In fact, over the last five games, he's played 24, 28, 23, a 36-minuter in that first game without Gobert against the Nets, and then just 22 minutes today. So the minutes are becoming a concern. Now, most of the time, I'll say I'm not really panicked. Yeah, Jim Butler, I'm not really worried. Mike Conley, I'm not really worried. Kyle Lowry, I'm not massively worried. This one here, I am. Rubio looks like he doesn't give a shit defensively, and he is a very, very good defender, but he doesn't seem to care. He just doesn't seem to be putting the effort in. We're seeing those lineups with Rocket Rodney Hood and Don Mitchell close games. We're seeing them play more minutes than Rubio on a regular basis. Look, the game before he was fine, 10-7-8 with 4 steals. So I think maybe we react a little bit, and I'm definitely not dropping Rubio in any sort of situation, but I am getting worried. And if I could get back a top 50 type player for Rubio in a trade, I would probably execute that. I think that there is a significant chance that we see Rubio play maybe a 25-minute-per-game role. It still starts next to Mitchell, and then Hood comes off the bench, but we have a Hood-Mitchell combination playing as key moments down the stretch and playing 30-plus minutes each while Rubio is down to 25. I think that is a significant concern, and it is a little bit worrying. But again, we don't have to go back far to see some pretty good games from Rubio. Yeah, 10-7-8 with 4 steals is good. 11-2-8, not far off what you wanted from him. He had a 30-point game just 2 weeks ago, and that was backed up before that with a 20-pointer and a 21-point game in a 3-game stretch. That's pretty impressive, along with 7 steals in that time frame. He started the season with back-to-back 10-assist games with 2 steals in each of those games. So we're not talking about just a complete horrendous run, which, going by some of the comments you see on Twitter, on Reddit, on wherever, man, Rubio, what's he doing? He's killing me. And then you go back and go, well, yeah, he's had 2 real stinkers in the last 3, but everything else hasn't been too bad. So there's a little bit of overreaction, but it's more the trend. And I understand the worry of the trend. I understand the direction that it's going is definitely concerning as Mitchell is stepping forward. Now, the fact that Rocket Rodney Hood is playing in that second unit and they need that scoring in that second unit so, so badly makes me think that Rubio will stick as a starter alongside Don Mitchell. But I am worried about how those minutes play out, whether he does get, you know, the 25 a night and Rocket and Don play 30 to 34 a night. I reckon that is a significant chance. Snyder seems real pissed at the way Rubio is playing, especially given the way his defense is going down. So that is a that is a real concern with what's happening with Rick Rubio here. So don't be surprised if we see sub 30 minute games from Rubio becoming relatively regular. Now, last season, it took him half a year to really fit into Tom Thibodeau's system. Maybe that's the case here, and he comes out and averages 19 and 10 with three steals for the last 40 games of the season. That's also a realistic possibility. So he's not a drop guy, but he is someone to have an elevated level of concern over, I believe, at this point. And that's probably as far as I would go with it, but an elevated level of concern, nonetheless. Let's move in now and talk about these games in some extra detail, as is always the best way to do it at this point in the show. The first game was the Sacramento Kings and the Washington Wizards. The question was sure to abound after George Hill started on fire. Is George Hill back? Do we got to go and add George Hill? And I would say that's a good game from George Hill. 16 points in 25 minutes, 4 rebounds, 3 triples in a steal. That's nice. But 25 minutes? One good game that we've seen in the last 3 weeks, I wouldn't be rushing to add Georgie Hill. In fact, owning any player on this Kings roster in a 12-man league is pretty impossible. Nobody played 30 minutes. In fact, nobody played over 26 minutes in this one, with Budrick Hield and Justin Jackson both playing 26, while De'Aaron Fox was just a shade under 26. And that's not the recipe. When you've got bad players, playing 26 minutes a night is not the recipe for fantasy success. So, yeah, holding on to George Hill, if Don Mitchell's around, you make that switch absolutely immediately. If Rocket Rodney Hood's around, I would probably drop Hill and grab Rocket in that sort of a scenario. If someone drops Rubio, I'd drop Hill and grab him there. We know Hill can provide the numbers, but he seemed disinterested. He seemed lackadaisical. He's not getting the minutes. This is probably the most minutes that he's played in almost a couple of weeks. So I'm not overly excited. As for Budrick, he had 12, 3, and 3 with 3 steals. Just really unexciting. As a fantasy option, you like the 3 assists, you like the 3 steals, but he's more of a 14-team league staple than a 12-team league guy. Zebo 12 and 9 in 23 minutes, and that enabled Scal to play 25 minutes. But again, I just have no faith in Labissiere getting enough minutes on a regular basis to be a 12-team league guy. It's hard to hold Cawley Stein, who played just 23. De'Aaron Fox is probably the number one fantasy asset on this team, and he had 10, 3, and 5 in 26 minutes. While Justin Jackson's getting the minutes, and he's doing very little with him. This is an absolute fantasy wasteland at this point. And at some point you think, okay, maybe these guys get shut down. But I don't think that the Kings are going to do a full shutdown. It's going to be one game that Randolph sits, and then Hill sits, and then Temple sits, and then Carter sits. Three of them will sit in one game, and Kufos will sit the next one. So it'll be up and down value, and Labissiere will play 29 minutes in one, and then he'll play 16 in the next one. And the overall value leaves them middling and not really all that exciting. On to the Wizards, Johnny Wall. Well, when you get hot shooting like this, it's always pretty good. He was 8 of 9 for 21 points. He had 4 triples and 9 assists, and that's a huge, huge boost for a guy like John. While Bradles Beal had 14, 7, and 7. The 7 assists, fantastic for Beal. Marcin Gortat, who was pretty poor up until this game, 18 and 7 with a block. But there's a few caveats you have to throw around the league. Against Brooklyn, against Phoenix, against Sacramento, and against the Lakers, they're probably the 4 top asterisk games, especially for big men. And when a big man puts up big numbers against Sacramento, you do take it with a grain of salt. So I'm not getting overly excited about Gortat's 18 and 7. Markeith only played 20 minutes, 4 and 2. I think he's a 12-team league guy, but he's a low upside, low priority guy. Otto Porter is the 12th ranked player in fantasy at the moment, as unbelievable as that is. 15 and 7 for Otto in his playing time, while Kelly Oubre was productive in 22 minutes. But to me, he is more of a 12-team league standard sort of a guy. Let's move on to the next one. It was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks, one of the funnest games of the day. We saw LeBron James get into a fight with Frankie Ntilikina and Enes Kanter. The Knicks were up by 21 points, and the Cavs just steamrolled home on the back of LeBron James passing to Kyle Korver. Korver, who missed, I think, his first 7 threes in this game and then hit 5 in the final quarter. Really, really fun game. LeBron had 23, 9, and 12 with 3 blocks. He is the number one ranked player in fantasy this season, as unbelievable as that is. I was able to get him, I think, a pick 12 in some leagues, and I'm very, very happy about that. As for Korver, 21 points with 5 triples and 5 rebounds. He's had a few of these explosions this season, but it's really hard to rely upon him on an ongoing basis. A great streamer for threes. Well, Dwayne Wade had a decent game. 15 and 8, 3 assists, 2 steals and a block, but I wouldn't be putting a massive amount of faith in Dwayne. Many people asking, Kevin Love, what happened here? 23 minutes for Lovey, 6 and 6. Well, they just went with a different situation. They were down big. The Channing Frye spaced lineup was working well. So Love just got benched down the stretch. I wouldn't be overly worried that it's going to be a 23-minute night situation moving forward. But we've talked about how he gets misused and limited quite a bit. And to be honest, he was pretty piss poor in this game. So I totally understand why Ty Lue would bench him. Not that Lue's a great coach, but I think that that's a fair enough move. Wouldn't be panicking too much about Love. Iman Shumpert started in place of Derek Rose, 0-4. He is not a real pickup. While Jay Crowder had 13 points, but played just 22 minutes. So yeah, really hard to own him, I believe, in 12-team leagues. On to the Knicks. Tim Hardaway, man, every time he plays the Cavs, it's just bananas time. Another huge night for Timmy. 28-10, 5 assists, 4 triples, 2 steals, 1 block. When we go back and look at the season, when we head into next preseason, we're going to really stress, don't panic at the start of the season. It is imperative. Everyone, man, Tim Hardaway's got to be dropped. His shit, he's killing me. I lost week 1 because of him. Yeah, cool. How about the numbers he's putting up now? Like, he is putting up big numbers. If he could play the Cavs every week, you'd be pretty happy. But he's just going to give you pretty much the exact value of where you drafted him, I feel like. Really positive signs here to get 10 boards and 5 assists. But he's looking much stronger at the moment, as is Enes Kanter. I have never hid the fact that I like Enes Kanter as a player, or even as a bloke. 20 points, 16 boards, 4 assists. And I don't know how many times I've said this phrase. When he gets the minutes, he will get the stats. There is absolutely zero problem with that. The problem is trying to rely upon when he gets the minutes. Now, there was a comment someone wrote on Basketball Monster today. I think he needs his projection updated because, yeah, his minutes seem fairly secure. And the last two games, you could say yes. The previous two games, he played 20 and 23 minutes. So that's in the last week. He's had two games of over 25 and two games of under 25. And with Joakim Noah returning from his suspension, and Noah was able to play in this game, but they left him as an inactive. I don't think that'll be the case every game, but I also don't think that Noah is going to be an every night part of the rotation. But I don't have full confidence in Kanter. Many people also don't have confidence in Kanter because they're like, oh, they're not going to let Willie Hernan Gomez just sit around and do nothing. I'll say it again. Enes Kanter is a much better version than Billy Hernan Gomez. Enes Kanter is 25 years old. He is not old. He is a much better version than Willie. I understand Willie's on a cheaper contract. And he's a bit younger. But Kanter works fantastically with Porzingis. He is still young enough. I think he's a really good teammate. Apart from the people in Utah, I wouldn't say that, but I think he's been fine in OKC and he's really good here. And I think you should be seeing him locked in as the starting center at 25 plus minutes per night from here on out. And that's enough value. Neil Aquina, 24 minutes for Frank, 7-3, but it's the 6 steals. He had 5 in the first half. He gets steals in massive, massive bunches, and that's enough for him to be owned in 12-team leagues with the expectation that I believe, based on nothing, based on guesswork, that by December, he will start and play 28 minutes plus by December. And that's a total guess. I don't have Jeff Hornacek's ear. If I did, he wouldn't be doing half the shit that he does. But I believe that Frank will be starting by December. As for Jarrett Jack, he was piss poor, 2-5 in 24 minutes. And Doug McDirt lived right up to the name, 2 points in 20 minutes. Interestingly, Joakim Noah, Bill Hernan Gomez, and Mick Beasley, all DNP CDs in this one. As for Porzingis, 20-7.
Porzingis
wasn't even his best game, 2 steals and a block. Really inefficient from both the field and the line. But when you're having a shit game and you put up 20-7, that's superstar type territory there, which is where we're at with Kristaps. The next game, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Milwaukee Bucks. Tyreke Evans just unstoppable, pretty much. 27-6-3, 33 minutes, 69% from the field.
Giggity!
Look, you know he's a must-own. If you can trade him away, try and get a top 50 guy back, because if he doesn't get hurt, there's no reason this stops. Maybe some of the field goal percentage and efficiency drops, the three-point shooting drops, but he is crushing it, and he is just owning this second unit. Dylan Brooks remained in the starting lineup. Had a big offensive game. 19 points on just 9 shots for Brooksy. 4 rebounds and a steal. With the way that he has played, Wayne Seldon is not in the rotation at all, who was potentially going to be the starter on opening night. And Ben McLemore had one of the more horrendous games you will ever see. 12 minutes for Benny Mack. No shots, 3 fouls and 3 turnovers. I don't think it actually gets worse than what Ben McLemore did in this game. So, yeah, you're owning Brooksy over McLemore pretty clearly. Now, I don't think that Brooksy is a must-own player. I think that's probably going a little bit too far with what he's done for the season. In fact, like now before all these guys are back, he was the 146th ranked player, which doesn't make him a must-own 12-team league guy. Averaging 9-4, but with the 1.2 steals and half a block. His efficiency is nice, but he is really good in a 14-team league, and he does have some stream ability and has really acquitted himself quite well. Mario Chalmers, 14-5-6, one of his better games. It started off poor, but he looked good in the end. Again, just a deeper league guy. A nice Marc Gasol game, 16-10-6. And the question I'm getting all over the place, what the hell is going on with Mike Conley? Conley was not good in this game. 7 points, 2 assists, 2 triples and a steal. And I think it's fair to say that he is being bothered to a degree by this Achilles. But the main problem is the shooting. 2 of 12 from the field for Mick Conley. Definitely not his best outing. He's the 104th ranked player this season, despite averaging 17 points a game. And that's because his assist numbers are down 2 per game to 4.1. His steal numbers are just at 1.0, and he's shooting 38% from the field and 31% from three when he was a 46% shooter last season. So he has got massive scope to come back up. You go from 38 to 46%, you're looking to go from 17 points per game up to 20 points per game. More confidence leads to maybe an extra couple of minutes, maybe an extra 1.5 assists per game, and maybe he picks it up defensively. So I think that this is an absolutely huge buy low moment for Mike Conley, and I would be buying real, real low on him. I'd be throwing anyone, Trevor Ariza, throw him at the Mike Conley owner. Like, who knows? People, the amount of questions I've got, and people always say, Josh, you throw out these trade things, they're bullshit. This wouldn't happen in a competitive league. You have zero idea of the trade questions, of the drop questions. I have had questions say, do I drop Mike Conley in 10-team leagues? Like, this happens in leagues. So it might not be your league, but this is not shit that I am just making up. The overreactions for many, many people is extraordinary. So that's where you try and take advantage of it. Avery Bradley for Mike Conley. Do it. I would. No problem. Timmy Hardaway for Mike Conley. I would. No worries at all. These are pretty, farting Will Barton's on a roll. Could you get Mike Conley? Well, Barton's ranked 30 spots ahead of Conley at the moment. So maybe you could use that to your advantage. Again, these are real deals that happen. I'm making these ones up, but these are the sort of deals. I talked to you already. Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal. 2 people tweeted me and told me that they got Bradley Beal back for Jaylen Brown after the first 3 games of the season. This shit is not made up. This is not implausible. It might feel implausible in your league, but weird stuff does happen. So go low. Buying low on Mike Conley is not throwing Dennis Schroeder at him. Buying low on Mike Conley is not throwing the iron shoulder at him. Buying low is throwing Lord Alfred Payton, maybe, at him. Maybe that's the way you go. Buying low is throwing Jeremy Lamb, who's about to lose value. Maybe it's Darren Collison, who's losing a bit of value at the moment. That is a buy low for Mike Conley. So don't lose yourself a ton of value by doing that. On the Bucks, Yanni, 27-9-7, 2 steals, 2 blocks. That's just what he does. While the Muppet, John Henson, 17-8, 3 assists and 2 blocks. Only owned in 35% of leagues. No idea why. It has to be owned in every 12-team league and probably 10-teamers as well. No one's coming in to take his minutes. 17-4-2 for Chrissy Middleton with 4 triples there, while Eric Bledsoe, he was a little bit doubtful to play, or he was questionable to play with knee soreness. Played 27 minutes, had 15-7-4, probably his best performance as a member of the Bucks. People will look at the box score and go, what's going on with Brogo? 19 minutes for Brogdon, do we drop him? Got that question as well. The 2 previous games, he played 33 minutes apiece, both with Bledsoe. In this game, in his first 9 minutes, he had 3 fouls, and then Kidd sat him down 1 minute into the second quarter after he had 3 fouls, and he didn't reappear again until after halftime. So he was limited by fouls. He probably would have played another 6-7 minutes in that second quarter, I would guess, and probably would have played another couple in the third or fourth quarter. So I wouldn't be overly worried about those numbers. He still played well. He scored 10 points in those 19 minutes. Definitely not a drop candidate, but someone might. So pay some attention to Malcolm Brogdon appearing on your waiver wire, because it could be a real interesting one. I don't think he's going to play 33 a night necessarily. I also don't think that 19 a night is a realistic expectation. The Atlanta Hawks and the New Orleans Pelicans, Kent Bazemore with a big Bazemore game, 22-4-7 with 3 steals and 3 triples. Offer him for Mike Conley. That'll never work, but this is a big game from Baze. Still only played 29.5 minutes, but does he lose some value when Bembry comes back? Maybe. He is still a guy that you want to own in 12-10 leagues, even though he is up and down. You'll be looking at the box score and you'll be going, who the hell is Tyler Kavanagh? 18 minutes for Kavanagh, 16-6, 4 triples and 2 assists. He is a two-way player for this team. And with The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, and the Baptist, John Collins, accumulating a lot of fouls, 8 fouls between them in their, let's work out how many minutes, in their 35 minutes, that was the reason for Kavanagh getting that playing time. Now, he got hot. He was 6 of 7 from the field, which included 4 triples as a stretch 4. Numbers which, A, are not repeatable, and he's not even going to be with the team all season. So nothing to get excited by looking at Kavanagh there. He's been playing like 2 or 3 minutes a game with Muscala and Ilyasova out. Once one of those guys comes back, he's off to the G League, and there's nothing to really see there. As for the Undertaker, still had 11 and 6. The Baptist had 12 and 6 in their limited minutes. There's still some real value for both of those players, enough to be owned in 12 teamers. 11, 2 and 5 for Dennis Schroeder, while Torian Prince, 4, 4 and 3, 3 steals and a block. And he's another player that I get questioned. Oh, you sure about Torian Prince? Like, I'm going to find out exactly. I know before this game he was ranked pretty highly. He still is. He's the 80th ranked player. So yeah, I feel pretty good about holding on to the 80th ranked player, despite the fact that he's only shooting 42% from the field. He's averaging 13, 5 and 2, 1.5 threes and 1.5 steals and over half a block. I feel fine with him. I'm not overly worried. Yeah, this was a stinker of a performance in terms of shooting, but he adds the 4 boards, he adds the 3 assists, the 3 steals, the 1 block. That's plenty. That's absolutely plenty. On to the Pelicans. Boog. 22, 16 and 7 with 3 steals and 3 threes. That is another monster performance from one of the number one fantasy players going around. Where is he at the moment? Is he number 2? Yeah, he is the second ranked fantasy player for this season behind LeBronald. Another big game for him, but I guess the big news from the Pelicans was that Rajon Rondo made his season debut. He was on a 6-minute restriction, which is one of the more bizarre minute restrictions I've seen. He played 5 minutes in the first quarter, and that was it. He had 2 points and 2 assists. He hit his only field goal attempt. So if you're looking for someone who's going to be able to provide some assists, some decent rebounds, some okay steals, you can definitely add him. Now, he was a guy that I did like before the hernia injury. You could get him at like 100, 110 in drafts, and I thought he's got a real chance to be a top 70 type of player. So if he's around, you 100% go and add him. Be careful who you drop, of course. Now, if he's only playing with a 6-minute restriction in that first game, I imagine the restriction will be in place for a week, 2 weeks maybe. So, you know, you're not expecting big numbers. And if you do have him in your IR slot, don't activate him. I get this question all the time. I've been even getting it now about Chris Paul. This is going to lead me to a tangent. Josh, who do I drop to activate Chris Paul? You don't drop anybody. Chris Paul doesn't play until Thursday, and he is going to be back on Thursday. You've got Tuesday's games. You've got Wednesday's games. You've got Thursday's games. There is a decent chance that someone else on your team will get injured in that time. So you'll just switch them around. Chris Paul might come back and play 24 minutes in his first one. Rondo came back and played 5. What if he plays 12 in the next one, 16 in the next one, 20 in the next one, 21 in the next one, 24 in the next one? And it's 3 weeks before he even approaches 30 minutes per game. Use that advantage of having your IR spot there. Now, sometimes there'll be a hot free agent and you can't make that ad if you're still on your IR spot. And in that case, you make the activation, you do whatever you need to do. But if you're sitting okay, you're in a comfortable position, just leave it there as an extra roster spot. Just leave him there. And wait until he gets some of his minutes back before being 100%, I need to go and activate him. The same, seriously, people are activating Chris Paul, need to do it now. Like, you got 3 days. Just wait. Just wait and see what happens. And who knows what's going to go down in that time. Any of your players could get hurt. Chris Paul could get hurt again. He could come back and play 10 minutes. Numerous things can happen. Darius Miller got hot, 21 points, which included 5 triples in 22 minutes. He's looked much better recently, but it's not something that I'm going to get overly pumped about. When Rondo comes back, we might see him in that starting lineup as some extra shooting as he replaces Etuan Moore, as Rondo replaces Moore in that lineup, although Moore was really good, and I think he's a better player than Rondo, personally. 24, 2, and 4 in 34 minutes for Moore on some really, really hot shooting, but both of him and Miller are deeper league guys, with Moore clearly being the more impressive guy there. Drew Holiday played 43 minutes. He had 13, 5, and 5, and a triple one, but nothing spectacular. The assists will drop a little bit with Rondo. I think the scoring may go up, but I think he's sort of just locked into where he is at the moment. It was interesting to see Ian Clark back into the rotation after missing the last game, or after being deliberately missed out of the last game. Or Cheick Diallo, I thought maybe we've realized, let's play him some minutes, but no, 2 minutes in this one after 19 in the last one. Nothing too great about that, clearly. Let's go to the next one. It is Minnesota versus the Utah Jazz. I've been on many, you know, discussions, rants, some might call them, about Tom Thibodeau. And yeah, you get the pushback from someone. Yes, some people. Oh, how dare you say he's a bad coach? He's going to be a Hall of Famer. How can you say he's a shit coach? Used to be a good coach. Shit coach now. That's my opinion on Thibodeau. Because when you are up by over double digits in 42 of the 48 minutes of a game, there is no need to play Karl Anthony Towns 41 minutes, Jim Butler 39, Jeff Teague 38, Taj Gibson 39, or Andrew Wiggins 39 minutes. There is zero need to play these guys and grind them into the dust in every game that you play. That is poor coaching. It is piss poor man management. And it's just bad. It's just bad coaching. I can say that Tom Thibodeau was a really good coach, a great coach, in fact. But I feel like many parts of the NBA and his management stuff, his GM stuff, is not good. I think it's part. Some of it's passed him by now. I know he always had these minutes issues with these players. It's going to be a problem. It is going to be a problem at some point with these guys. It is going to be impactful. Karl Anthony Towns had 24 and 13 with 4 triples, a steal, and a block. We love it for fantasy as long as they stay healthy. But that's the problem. Big game from Townsy. And all the Jimmy Butler panickers. He came out a few days ago and said, you're going to see, I'm going to get mine, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to do this. And he was right. Now, sometimes players talk shit, but he was right. 21, 4, and 10. The 10 assist is beautiful. 2 steals, 1 block, 50% from the field, and 9 of 10 from the line. He is getting to the line a shit ton. And that was one of the big reasons why his value was dropped. He just wasn't aggressive. He wasn't getting to the line. That has turned around, and I think that from now on out, we should be looking at Butler as probably a top 30 guy, and realistically, he's got a massive chance to be a top 15 guy again, if this sort of attitude continues. Still took less shots than Jeff Teague, which is always a real bother to me when that sort of thing happens. Teague had 22, 3, and 3 with 4 triples, while Taj had 15 and 10, and a triple one for Taj, not a sentence that I'd say all that often. I think Taj has back-end 12-team value, while Wigo was a little bit disappointing, but in anti-Andrew Wiggins fashion, 11 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. That is as un-Andrew Wiggins of a line as you could get. And he only took 10 shots. So really, really bizarro world Andrew Wiggins here. For the Jazz, I've spoken about Don Mitchell. I've spoken about Ravishing Rick. They made a change to the starting lineup. And this is something we talked about yesterday when talking about how the Jazz were going to deal with the absence of Rudy Gobert and thinking that the 36 minutes that Derek Favors played against the Nets might not be applicable against all other opponents. Well, it turns out that was the case. Favors played just 27 in this one. They changed Tabo Sefolosha from the starting power forward to being a reserve and Jonas Jerebko started. Joe Johnson has got to come back at some point soon to add into that mix. So Tabo is not going to be getting 30 plus minutes a night, it appears. Jerebko was good, 13 and 6 with 3 triples, and every time he has got minutes in his career, for Detroit, for Boston in particular, he's been a fantasy asset. Could he have some level of value here? I think if you're in 20 teamers, you want to add him, 30 teamers obviously, but it doesn't mean that he's going to start every game. They said that they started him here so he could match up better against the more powerful Taj Gibson. You might see Tabo back there next game. You might see Joe Johnson getting some of those minutes. The other thing we saw is Epe Udo played 21 minutes here, 4, 3, and 2, 2 blocks, but really just a deep league sort of a guy. Well, Jingle and Joe, it was a turd for him. 0 points in 24 minutes, missed all 6 of his shots, dished the 5 assists. I wouldn't be too worried. I wouldn't be running to panic over Ingles based on this one game. He's still the 63rd ranked player this season, despite having a usage of only 17% and scoring under 10 points per game. Because he's hitting over 2 threes, over 3.5 assists, and a 1.7 steals, and he's not even that efficient at the moment with a true shooting of under 55%. So he's actually got room to go up in his value. So he's still a must-own player despite this goose egg that he threw up in this one. Let's go on to the next game. It is the LA Lakers and the Phoenix Suns. The Lakers were like down 9-0 at the start of the game and then really roasted the Suns after that, and the Suns were quite pathetic after that initial start. The Lakers get the victory. Lonzo Ball only saw 28 minutes, 7-5-5 with 2 steals. And again, the scoring, the field goal percentage, you know that's a problem. The other numbers, you love it. 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. He only got 28 minutes because Jordy Clarkson was cooking. He had 26, 25 points, 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. His usage continues to be absolutely bananas through the roof. He has got a usage of 30% this season, which is just phenomenal. He's got a true shooting of 59%, which is also phenomenal, and shooting 51% from the field. If you are confident that Jordan Clarkson is going to continue to shoot 51% from the field on 30% usage, then you can own him. But remember, he is doing this and he is currently the 126th ranked player while doing shit, which is absolutely 100% inconceivably unsustainable. He will not continue to shoot at 51%. He should not continue to have a 30% usage, although that's more realistic than the level of efficiency that he's showing. And he's still not able to crack the top 125. Good game from Jordy. Just a lot of the shit he's doing is unsustainable. Brookie Lopez, if you can work out the nights that he's going to play 29 minutes or 21 minutes, let me know. I don't really think that I can. It's just up in the air. He played 28 here, had a 15 and 10 double-double with a block and a three. You're in a real tough spot with Lopez. You can't drop him. But who knows what you're going to get out of him. Andrew Bogut returned to the rotation. He played 16 really vital minutes. 0 points with 7 rebounds and 2 blocks, while Julius Randle 8 and 8 with 2 blocks in his 19 minutes. It is not going to happen. He is not going to play 29 minutes a game, 28 minutes a game, unless there is another injury. He will not play those minutes, but he is still a decently valuable player for 12-team leagues. His upside is just quite limited. Brandon Ingram, speaking of limited, 6-3-2 on 2 of 9 shooting, a shitful performance from Ingram. Still a guy that you hold, but after some promising performances, he has dropped off a little bit lately. Kyle Kuzma, future MVP, 11-6 with 3 triples, 33% from the field. Still got to own him, but I think we're starting to see a little bit of the shine come off the ludicrousness that was his performances early in the season. For the Suns, just stupidity in terms of the way this team just looks at this box score. 36 points for Devin Booker on 27 shots. TJ Warren, 23 points on 20 shots. So those two guys combined for 47 of the 95 shots that they took as a team, which is basically half. They combined for 59 of the 93 points, which is over half. And someone else just needs to step up. Booker was great, 36-4-3. Warren was great, 23-8. And my man, Dragan Bender, was also great.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
15 points for Bender, 2 threes, 5 rebounds, and so much of what he does just doesn't show up on the box score. He is a very, very good defender, and I will continue to say this. He is a better player than Marquese Chriss. He will be a better player than Marquese Chriss, and they should be playing him more minutes than Marquese Chriss. He is also a worse fantasy player than Marquese Chriss, despite this really nice performance from Bender. Just a deeper league sort of guy. 28 minutes for Tyson Chandler, 7 and 15. Alex Len, just forget that. If he's in a 12, I'd get rid of him. I don't think there's any point. 1 and 6 in 20 minutes. They're just going to dick him around. And now, are they going to introduce Greg Monroe now? Like, I don't know what they're going to do with his center spot. It's just very limited value for Len. Tyler Ulis started again, had 2 points in 27 minutes, 3 steals and 2 assists, while Mike James in 17 minutes had 5, 1 and 1. This is the situation. I'm not going to keep harping on it, but these point guards are both bad. They will rotate value, they will alternate value, and neither of them are must-own guys. You own Ulis over James because he's starting, so maybe 65% of the time he plays more minutes and is more productive, but there is zero top 100 value out of those guys. As for Chris, I should talk about him. He blocked 2 shots, he blocked 6 the game before, he ended with 4 points. The most important part is he had 1 foul, and that's really getting somewhere for him to have only 1 foul. Still remains a liability on the court, but the skills are there, they're tantalizing. If you are in a comfortable position, maybe you own him and you hold it and maybe it clicks. But in most cases, I'll say someone else can deal with that problem the majority of the time. Denver and Portland. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, 14-7-6 in his 33 minutes. Some extra minutes for Baby Neck in the last couple of games with Gaz Harris being out.
Nice, Gary!
That doesn't mean I want to go and add old Baby Neck here. Yeah, nice performance, 14-team league sort of a guy. Farton Will Barton is a clear must-own, 12-5-3, 2 triples and 2 steals in 34 minutes. That playing time will obviously reduce when Gaz returns, but it's good to see him out there. And the Blue Arrow, 39 minutes for Jamal, 18-5 with a steal. Another player who I've needed to preach extended confidence, but when you look, Malone has got faith in him. It's a weird way of showing it half the time, but he continues to start him. He continues to close him most of the time. And the last two games have been a really good reward for the Blue Arrow owners. So if he's on your waiver wire, I would be going and adding him. Manny Moutier had 4 points in 21 minutes. And good to see Dick Jefferson play 10 minutes. And by good to see, I mean, what a stupid waste of a roster move that they made. Although I did hear an interesting argument for it. I think it may have been from Nate and Danny on Dunked On, saying that the front office just cut Jameer so that Mike Malone would have no ability to play him and would have to play Murray and Moutier. And they said, well, we're not going to give you an old point guard to deal with. You have to play the young guys. So maybe that's a realistic scenario as to why they cut Jameer Nelson. Jokic only scored 6 points. Nurkic killed him. 7 boards, 3 steals and a block. Don't be too concerned there. While Millsap hit 5 triples with a steal and a block. He's having some really weird games. A 6 blocker the other day. 5 triples here. He has bounced back after a slow start. He was a really good buy low target and putting up some good numbers now. On to the Blazers. Dame Lillard, 15-5-7 with 4 steals in 34 minutes. Big night from him, while CJ McCollum had 17 points on an efficient line. While Yusuf Nurkic, 17-5 and some pretty poor shooting percentage, just 47% from the field for Nurk. Wasn't his worst game, wasn't his best game either. They did make a change to the starting lineup. Caleb Swanigan moved into the starting power forward spot after being pretty much out of the rotation for most of the night. That's a weird one. 6-5 for Swanigan, 2 blocks. He fouled out Marquise Chris style. Wouldn't be looking to add him in 12s or even 14 teams at this point, because Noah Vonleh outplayed him off the bench. 26 minutes for Vonleh, 8-10 with 2 steals and a block. Vonleh is a rebound streamer. He gets rebounds in massive, massive chunks. We'll see if Swanigan remains in the starting lineup, but I just don't think he's cut out for that sort of position at this point in his career. As for Mo Harkless, 2 points in 20 minutes. Still in a block were there, so still getting those defensive numbers, but shit, he just offers nothing else, and it's really, really hard to continue to own him in the majority of standard leagues. The Orlando Magic and the Golden State Warriors. Nikola Vucevic, only 27 minutes, which is pretty common for a big man against the Warriors, but 20 points, 2 triples, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. You're happy to get out of a matchup with the Warriors with those sort of numbers, while Fournier had 16, 2, and 2. Aaron Gordon, not his best night, 10-10. He'll be better there, while Lord Alfred Payton, 4, 2, and 5 in 25 minutes. That's a real turd from Payton. If he's going to get dropped in leagues, I've got no doubt about that. I would add him, and I would look to buy extraordinarily low on him. John Simmons had 13, 4, and 4. Fine in 12s. I wouldn't be scurrying to find if he's on the wire, though. While Terry Ross had 11 points and added 3 steals. More of a streamer. If you're looking as a deep league guy, Mo Spates, you got to have a look. Because John Isaac is out with that ankle. Now, if Isaac is back for the next game, then that limits Spates. But 9 points, 4 boards, 2 steals, 1 block. He's not going to be shy. He's going to shoot it as much as he wants. So Spates in the 20-team leagues, 30-team leagues, he's going to have some short-term value. On to the Warriors. Steph Curry was out, but that doesn't matter. They just smash whoever they play. Sean Livingston started and had 16, 2, and 6. Draymond had 24, and 5 with 2 steals, and KD had 21, 7, and 8. And predicting what this bench rotation is going to do is almost impossible. Pat McCaw down to 9 minutes. Well, it appears that Uncle P, Nick Young, and Omri Caspi, who were out of the rotation, are back in a pretty significant chunk. Now, as for Caspi, it's a tough one, because he's played like 18 minutes or 13 minutes a night minimum over the last 3 games. But in those 3 games, you've had no Durant for one of them, no Iguodala for one of them, and no Curry for the other one. So when everyone's healthy, does Caspi get squeezed? Jordan Bell was inactive in this one, so Kevon Looney could play 15 minutes. And in fact, Looney's playing minutes in the mid-teens for the last 4 or 5 straight games. Who knows how all of these backup guys are going to make out. Yeah, Young's a nice 20-team league guy. Caspi can be a really good option in those sort of leagues, but he could go from 20 minutes to 0 minutes really, really quickly. And that's obviously really frustrating as fantasy owners trying to work that out. The last game of the night, the Philadelphia 76ers get the victory on the road against the Clippers. Benny Simmons had 22 and 12, 4 assists, a steal and a block, 7 dunks, just 9 field goals, 7 dunks, just really crushing it. But the biggest number, probably the best stat for the entire day, is the fact that Joel Embiid played 36 minutes. I said a month ago by December he's going to be playing 31 minutes a night. That seems stupid now. There is zero doubt that he's playing 31 minutes a night in December. He could be playing 33, 34 minutes a night. He had 32 and 16. He took 20 shots. Yes, he annihilated your free throw percentage, going 9 of 16. But 55% from the field, monster numbers. The minutes are through the roof. This is he's a top 10 potential guy this season. And if you finish in the top 10, I don't think anyone should be surprised given the way that the minutes are going. He's currently 18th at the moment in just 28.5 minutes, averaging 21 and 11 with 1.5 blocks. So you add another 4 minutes onto that, then the guys ahead of him, Irving, Fournier, Oladipo, Covington, Porter, yeah, they're all in trouble. Like he's going to leapfrog them. Then you go Jokic at 12, Towns at 11, Paulie George at 10. Well, that they could definitely be in his sights as well. JJ Redick had his revenge game. Scored 10 points with 6 assists in 36 minutes. And by the way, Rick Rubio, revenge game, dud of the night. And this is the sort of thing that I do talk about with revenge games. It's all well and good when someone does it and puts up a big line, but what about when players don't do it? We don't really mention it. And that's why, and you can say, oh yeah, sometimes they put in some extra effort and all this sort of shit, but if there's no discernible pattern, there's no point. Oh, I'm going to play this guy because it's a revenge game. Well, 50% of the time it might work. 54% of the time it might work. No point. It just doesn't, it's not a significant enough, conclusive evidence that this happens. In fact, some players are significantly worse. And we saw that with Redick and Rubio today. As for Šarić, he started 34 minutes, 2, 3, and 2. Once Bayless comes back, he's going to have very limited value. He was 1 of 8 from the field. He was a borderline 12-team league guy, as it is. Onto the Clippers, there was no Pat Bev, there was no Danilo Gallinari, so Lou Williams went bananas, 31-7-6 with 5 steals and 5 triples for Lou. A huge night there. He will continue to put up numbers as long as those guys are out. Now, with Gallinari, he was asked before the game, how close are you? He says, mate, look, not really that close at all. Not even close to running. And then when Doc Rivers was asked, he said, we expect them both back on this upcoming road trip. Now, on Friday, they start a 5-game road trip, which lasts for about a week. So that gives like a 2-week time frame pretty much for Gallinari to come back. So I would expect at least a week more out for Gallo. Probably another 10 days out at least. Same for Beverly, it appears. You might see Pat Bev back on Friday, but I think the Rooster will push into the middle to end of next week would be my absolute guess at this time, trying to read between those two quotes between player and coach. Austin Rivers, 11-3-2 with 2 steals and 2 triples. Shit shooting. The minutes are there. He's fine, but he's such a low upside player. Well, DeAndre Jordan fouled out against Joel Embiid, 2-5. Not a great night there. My boy, Sindarius Thornwell, he started. He played 31 minutes, but he didn't do a huge amount. 7-2. Well, Juwan Evans, my other boy, 7-1-2 in 19 minutes there. Better give a quick shout out to Blakey Griffin, who had 29-6-5 in another pretty big performance with all those guys out for this Clippers team. All right. That is going to do us for all of the action from, what day? Monday's games. That was the day. I am going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back, talk some DFS, preview a 3-game Tuesday. Before I do that, we are going to have a song from another band from a listener, and the band is called Hot Potato Band, and this song is called Sail Away. Potato Band for that song, Sail Away. Now let's talk DFS for Tuesday, but we'll start by recapping Monday by looking at the perfect lineups across FanDuel and DraftKings. On FanDuel, Dame Lillard at 39.5, Shawnee Livingston at 29.4, Timmy Hardaway 53.5, while Lou Williams had 61.4, Jim Butler 47.8, Bob Cove 54.2, Blakey Griffin 41.7, the Muppet John Henson at 37.1, and Joel Embiid at 53.2 for a big, big total of 417.8, and that costs $59,900. On DraftKings, Don Mitchell 45.5, Kent Bazemore 44.5, Timmy Hardaway 56, Enes Kanter 47, Embiid 57, Lou Williams 60.25, Bob Cove 54, Jim Butler 47.5, and a total of 411.75 on DraftKings, and that cost $49,500. Let's go into the 3-game slate that we've got here. The first one of those games is the Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. We know that D'Angelo Russell is out and Spencer Dinwiddie will play, so he will start and he'll be a monster option. Of course, for Boston, we need to check the status of Kyrie Irving. If Kyrie is out, you're looking at more Marcus Smart value, more Terry Rozier value, and maybe Shane Larkin moves in as a GPP guy. But I would clearly prefer Rozier and Smart in that situation. Jarrett Allen is questionable for the Nets. If he misses, maybe Tyler Zeller gets out playing time, or it's a bump to Quincy Acey and Trev Booker there. But they're hardly really interesting GPP guys or cash guys, obviously. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie, 5,800, has been nowhere near that sort of value lately, but only playing 21 minutes a game over the last 5. I think we can look to extrapolate that out and hope that he can at least approach 30 points in this one. And I think at 5,800, he is a pretty decent value there. We've got Kyrie at 8,500. It's a good matchup for Kyrie if he can play with his facial fractures in the mask. I'd be okay looking at Kyrie as a GPP type of an option. Rozier at 6,000, that's really expensive. But if Kyrie is out, I think he's a decent cash play, but I wouldn't be giving any shit about him in any sort of situation where Irving plays. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart at 6,200, much like Rozier. If Irving is out, I like Smart at 62. If Irving is in, I want nothing to do with it. Caris LeVert at 54, can he have an impact with D'Angelo out? Well, he should see a larger role, maybe some more ball handling. 5,400 is probably just a little bit too expensive, though, for LeVert. At small forward, the blue swimmer, 4,900. You want nothing to do with that as a reliable option. Zero chance in cash. Nothing at all. Maybe as a tournament guy, but this guy's averaging just 22 over the last five and 17 over his last three. It's a shit matchup. I would have very little interest in the blue swimmer. I'd be more interested in Jumpin' Joe Harris at 3,400, who could see himself getting 22 to 23 minutes a night, with Dinwiddie playing as that starting point guard now. 3,400 for Jumpin' Joe. He can hit four or five triples. He can get two or three steals, and he could exceed value pretty comfortably. So I do like him as a GPP guy. Whereas Damari Carroll at 6,200, probably a little bit expensive for Damari. It's an $800 price rise, so I'll fade that. Well, Jaylen Brown comes in at a similar price. In fact, by similar, I mean identical. 6,200 for Jaylen. I'd much rather take him than Carroll. I think there is some validity to using him in cash, but he's not going to be one of the strongest options. But with only three games on, only six teams in action, maybe you consider him. At power forward, Jason Tatum at 51. Love that. The numbers have been down for Tatum, averaging just 17 over the past three. But remember, one of those was the game that he left with that ankle problem. So I think that Tatum at 5,100 is a pretty strong option, whereas Trev Booker at 43, not really much to love there. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, 7,500 for Rondé. Big minutes in the last game, 31 of them, put up 35 points. Really good numbers for Rondé, but that price is too expensive for me to get too excited. Marcus Morris is just Marcus Morris. He's at 4,600 and I'm not interested. While Vanilla Tice is at 3,500. He's in fact averaging 21 points over the last three games. If Kyrie is out, I'm in on Tice at 3,500. I think that's a really interesting play. He's played very well. At center, Jarrett Allen, no. Al Horford, big men against the Nets. It's almost as locky as it can get now. 7,800 is a lot for Horford, but I'm in on him getting 40 points here against the Nets. Bigly in on that, 7,800. Bainsey's at 4,500, while Tim Mozgov's at 3,000. I'd be more interested in Bainsey at 45 than I would Mozzie, but I will fade both of those guys, and I'd look more towards Tice as one of your cheaper big men. Let's have a squiz at how all that looks over on DraftKings. Tournament option, I think the blue swimmer, Jumpin' Joe Harris, and Marcus Smart are some tournament options. Smart is even more expensive on DraftKings than he is at FanDuel. And some cash options, we've got Spencer Dinwiddie, Damari Carroll is a much cheaper option on DraftKings, while Al Horford at 76, as I said. Centers against the Nets, it really doesn't get too much better than that, and look, it could really fall apart, but I think it's a really good option to use him in that situation. Toronto and Houston, the Rockets are favored by 6.5. The total here is 219 points. Norm Powell is doubtful. OG Anunoby started the second half for the Raptors, but it'll be more minutes for him, more minutes for DeLon Wright, more minutes for Fred VanVleet, and more minutes for CJ Miles without anyone really getting up to 29 or so a game, which makes them all potential cash options considering how cheap that, potential GPP options considering how cheap they are, but relying upon any of them for cash is probably not the best way to go about it. Now, Nene missed the last game due to his ankle problem. He should be ready to go, and that could put a bit of a cramp on Clint Capella's style. Hopefully D'Antoni just runs him the 30 minutes a night and lets him just kill the Raptors, but I do have my level of concern if Nene happens to play. Now, if Nene is out with that ankle, then I'm smashing Capella, like just really smashing him. DeLon is at 3,400 as a point guard. He could get some extra minutes. He is a GPP play, probably behind Miles and behind both Miles and Anunoby. For the point guards, Kyle Lowry, 7,700. I'm okay with Lowry. I feel pretty good about getting at least 30 out of him. Probably got 35-point floor here, which at 7,700 is not too bad. So I'm okay with Kyle there. Fred VanVleet, Bob Brown, no. Shooting guard, Eric Gordon, 6,300. There's very little upside in Gordon there, but I feel pretty good about getting 30 out of him. So that makes him a really solid cash play in a good matchup. While DeMar DeRozan, I also think he's fairly solid, 8,100. Now, I would prioritize Gordon over DeRozan, but if I've got the extra $1,800 left, I would switch it to DeMar and get myself an extra 7 or 8 points, even though that might not seem like value. With only three games on, $12,500 for Jim Harden. I think he's going to be fairly highly owned on this slate, considering there aren't really any other high-priced players out there. He is by far and away the most expensive player. So $12,500 for Jim, I think he's going to be a fairly popular name in cash lineup. So yeah, with his ability to get 60 points, it's not a bad play at $12,500. And these sort of three-game slates, we're not looking at 420 scores. We're looking at 350s, 340s, 330s as cash line numbers. So Harden should be okay. At small forward, we've got two punt options, Anunoby and Miles, 32 and 3100 respectively. Miles probably has the higher upside. We don't know who's going to start yet. I don't think that's going to make a huge, huge difference, and they probably play similar minutes off the bench. Anunoby's upside is based on his ability to get steals and blocks, and we know that they're 3 points each in FanDuel's scoring system, so he could get you two steals, two blocks, and then we're talking about 12 points right off the bat, and then he's at 4x value straight away. So that's where he gets a fair chunk of value, whereas CJ Miles comes from threes, which they're not scored as a bonus category, so it doesn't give him quite as much value there. Trev Ariza is at 5,700, limited upside, pretty high cash floor, so he's okay in that setting, while 4,300 for PJ Tucker doesn't really get too much happening for me. At power forward, Serge Ibaka's at 5,300. I feel that's okay for cash. He's not blowing the doors off anybody, but I think he can get 25 and feel pretty good about it, while Ryan Anderson is a tournament play. And Luke Marmute, I would have loved him at 3,500. At 4,300, I'd probably have to pass. It's probably just a little bit too high for Marmute. At center, Nene's at 3,200. Maybe. Tournament, maybe. GPP, he could get 20, but I'm not loving that. Valanciunas at 5,300, I want nothing to do with him, unfortunately. While Clint Capela at 7,500, he's just averaging 42.5. What of it over the last three games? Just killing it pretty much everywhere. Decent price rise, but I'm in on smashing him again to get that 35-pointer and feeling pretty bloody good about it. The backup center in Toronto, will it be Bebe? Will it be Poeltl? Well, if it's going to be anyone you take a punt on, it's going to be Bebe because he does have a much higher fantasy ceiling. So he can be the GPP guy. Valanciunas is getting toasted by Capela. Bebe can come in and have four blocks and grab 10 boards and do that in 12 minutes, and that's going to be enough to return value there for Lucas Nogueira. On DraftKings tournament, guys, Anunoby, Miles, both options, and then some cash plays. You've got Jim Harden, you've got Eric Gordon, you've got DeRozan and Lowry, Ibaka, and then Trevor Ariza, and Marmute comes in at 3,500. I feel good about Marmute at 3,500, giving me enough value to be a cash play, and that enables you to get a guy like Harden in, who is at 12,300 over on DraftKings. All right, let's move on to the last game of the night. That is, of course, the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks. The spread is currently the Spurs by 6.5, and the total is 202 points. A few situations we need to monitor. Joffrey Laverne is questionable, as is Dan Green, with a hamstring problem for the Spurs. Manu rested the last game. He should be back. And then on Dallas side of things, Dorian Finney-Smith and Devin Harris are both questionable. So there are obviously the what-if scenarios over on Basketball Monster, and you can see how that all plays out. If Dan Green is out, Bryn Forbes will likely start, and he becomes a GPP option. Brandon Paul also comes into the fray there. If Laverne is out and Green is out, maybe Davis Bertans becomes an option. Kyle Anderson gets a little bit more value as well. For Dallas, if Finney Smith and Harris are out, then Yogi Ferrell and Wes Matthews will have to play more minutes. John Clavel will play more, but he's not really going to be too much an impactful guy. It's more Wesley Matthews and Yogi Ferrell who get that bump in value in Dallas if those guys are out. At point guard, I like Ferrell anyway, 4,300. The minutes are fine for him. A big game in the last one. It's not a great matchup, but that price is not too high, so I'm okay using Yogi. Pat Mills at 45, I'll probably pass on him and DeJounte Murray. At shooting guard, Matthews at 5,100. I think he went scoreless in the last game. 12.8 FanDuel points anyway. 5,100, more of a tournament guy than anything. While Manu at 41, JJ Barea at 42, Devin Harris at 35, Dan Green at 51. Very, very little to get me excited about with those players. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 5,200. I think that's brilliant for cash. Get my 25, Kyle. Maybe go to 30. I really like him there. Rudy Gay at 5,300. I don't feel overly confident, especially with a bit of a blowout potentially looming. The pencil Harrison Barnes, 6,900. I think that's 35, almost locked in for Barnesy. He's upped his rebounding rate significantly this season, and that's helping his fantasy numbers. At power forward, Dirk had 7 points in the last game. 4,500. The Spurs big man, the Spurs defense, I think I'll fade Dirk at that price. Well, Dwighty Powell at 3,600. He dropped 25 in the last game. Maybe in a tournament, you can look at Dwight, get some of those center minutes that Nerlens Noel isn't going to get. So you could look at Dwight at 3,600. LaMarcus Aldridge at 87 could really tear this team apart, get those 40 points, probably maybe only play 30 minutes, but I think that he is a solid cash option at 8,700. Then you've got the centers, Mejri, Laverne, Gasol. The only one I'd care about is Gasol at 6,600, and I think that's a fairly decent option, cash and tournaments. He's coming off some pretty strong form, averaging 33 points over the last five games, and I wouldn't expect Nerlens Noel to play unless the game absolutely gets into garbage time, which it could very easily do. On DraftKings, the options we're looking at here, tournaments, Dwight Powell and Wes, and then for cash, we've got Aldridge, the pencil, Kyle Anderson, Dennis Smith, and Yogi Ferrell. I didn't talk about Dennis Smith, actually, on DraftKings, on FanDuel, which I should have. He's at 6,300. I know it's the Spurs matchup. I'm all right with that. I think he can get 30. He's playing really well at the moment. I think 30 is almost a baseline level for Dennis Smith, despite this being somewhat of a negative matchup for him. All right, let's take a look at a couple of the other DFS sites. We'll start with Yahoo, talk about some tournament options. The Blue Swimmer is a minimum salary guy, as is OG Anunoby and DeLon Wright, Dwight Powell and CJ Miles. They're all worth a tournament look, as is Caris LeVert, Terry Rozier, of course, if Irving is out, and Marcus Smart. For cash, I look at Dinwiddie, Kyle Anderson, Yogi Ferrell, Marmute, Hollis Jefferson, Powell, Capella, Pencil, Horford, Ibaka, Tatum, Dennis Smith, and LaMarcus Aldridge. Over on Moneyball, some tournament picks, Anunoby, Miles, and the Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb. DeLon Wright, another option there as a tournament play. And then for cash, we've got Smart, DeRozan, Harden, Horford, Aldridge, Lowry, Harrison, Barnes, Ibaka, Tatum, Dennis Smith, Capella, Derek? Jesus. That was me combining Damari Carroll and Eric Gordon. So Damari Carroll and Eric Gordon, Yogi Ferrell, and Spencer Dinwiddie as some cash options on Moneyball. And then for Draft Stars, Anunoby and Miles, Ryan Anderson as tournament options. And then for cash, you've got Powell, Capella, Horford, Barnes, Aldridge, DeRozan, Harden, Damari, Eric Gordon, Kyle Lowry, Marmute, Yogi Ferrell, Hollis Jefferson, and Spencer Dinwiddie. That does it for today's show, guys. If you are watching this on YouTube, go and subscribe, give it a thumbs up, leave a comment. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. That would be awesome. It's a great way. It's the best way that you can show support for this podcast. It is free. It takes 30 seconds of your time. Write whatever you want in that comment section. Josh has a sexy beard. What's wrong with his eyebrows? His ears are really small. I don't care what you write. Just give it 5 stars and boost the ranking of the show. You can also find it on Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including the new hosts of Locked On Bulls and Locked On Warriors. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Ennis Cantor.